This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live. We're live both at the same time. We're live on Instagram, live on Pet Life Radio. Here with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. And of course, my simulcast with IG Live, Instagram Live, where you can join me anytime, ask me any questions you got. Good morning to you, Steve. Good morning. And it's all about you, really, you and your pets, nothing about me. So take advantage of it and give me a holler on anything you may have. Oh, God, good. You got the tick off. It was huge. Yeah, I did. We were able to get the whole thing off with the mouth parts and everything because that's important. Todd here sent me a picture of a large tick on his dog and right above the eye. And actually, it's good information to have. First of all, they're really good instruments you can get at a pet store. They're sort of de-ticking things. One's like a little scoop, one's like a little tweezer. But Todd fortunately had a tweezer at home. And so the trick is this, you don't want to jerk it for sure. If you jerk it fast, then you're going to leave the mouth parts in. And there are little things in the mouth parts that are stick to skin. It's like a splinter that will never come out. I mean, it'll take a long time. So the issue here is that you put a tweezer right up against the skin, just at the mouth parts. That's all you want to do. You want to get a firm grip, but not to break it away, just to tight. Then you start turning it. I always rate counterclockwise. It shouldn't make a difference which one. I don't know why they always taught counterclockwise. Maybe it's easier. I don't know. But anyway, you want to turn it about two or three turns counterclockwise. Then by the start with the fourth and fifth turn, as you're turning it, you are lifting it gently. But you always have to be, it's really hard to do with just regular tweezers because your two fingers are holding it closed. Whereas if you get one of these devices at a pet store, it holds it for you. So now you don't have to worry about holding the tweezer anymore. You just have to turn it. And anyway, you just want to turn it a couple of times, usually two or three. Then by the fourth turn, you're continuing to turn counterclockwise, but you're gently lifting it as you're turning. And hopefully then you'll get the entire tick off with mouth parts. And Todd, it looks like that's what you did, which is great. So Bethany, how can you tell the difference between a dog's anxiety breathing and pain panting? It's a good question. I think, and also add another one in there, dementia breathing. And I guess that could fall under the anxiety. But I mean, my old lab all of a sudden wakes up, he's sitting there sleeping on his bed or on our bed. And all of a sudden he starts, and I can tell him to stop and he stops. So one of the things is that if it's pain, then it's going to be more difficult for them to stop. If it's anxiety, because their brain is somewhere else, or they're anxious for some reason, and you tell them to stop, they're getting attention, they usually will stop. But if it's pain, they probably won't be able to stop. It may stop for a second, but they're going to go right back to it again. And then also, if it was pain, there's often other body part associated with it. Now, for example, if it's a joint pain, you're going to see limping, or if you touch an area, they're going to actually, cry. If it's abdominal pain, you'll see them walk with a very tight abdomen. They might have diarrhea. You might hear a lot of borborygmus. That's the gut sounds that you hear. So what you can do is use other clues to help you determine whether or not this is purely just a panting, anxiety panting, whatever, or a fear panting, or is it actual pain? So try those things and see if that works. And sometimes it might be tough. So if it happens a lot and you want to try to differentiate, then you use another good old-fashioned trick, response to treatment. Treat it. If it's anxiety, and you give it a little even Benadryl or Trazodone or Prozac or Xanax and it stops, that was anxiety. But if you give it some pain meds, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory or gabapentin or whatever else was going on stops with it, like the limping or the intense abdomen or the diarrhea, then it was probably something pain. All right. Let's see. Hello, JB. So first of all, hope up for those of you who celebrated, Happy New Year to everybody. And let's see. Oh, I had some things we talked about, some philosophical questions. So if we don't get some questions from you, which I love to get your questions, we can talk about some philosophical things I can give you to think about. And I would love to hear your thoughts, but you got to answer so everybody else can hear your thoughts too. You can't answer me verbally. I'll say, oh yeah, that's how I feel. No, you got to put it down. I want other listeners and viewers to sort of, you know, chime in as well and see what they think about certain things. So first of all, we want to talk about the obviously the high cost of care. At what point does it stop? At what point do you feel guilty not being able to provide? I will tell you that it's a very personal opinion, and what you might do in one case may be different than another case. So I get it. But fortunately, I have one of my classmates, actually, he left veterinary medicine, not because he didn't love it. In fact, he did love it. It was because he was in Central California, very farm country. People were, you know, not doing well. They were probably, you know, up lower middle class or less. And he often had to practice what we call in our world, economic euthanasia, where it wasn't necessarily for the disease. It wasn't a disease, it was terminal. And the dog was in tons of pain, right? It was because they couldn't afford even a workup. If something was going to cost over $200, hell, doc, I'll take him out there and I'll shoot him. I mean, and my friend Chris got so frustrated not being able to provide all the care that he was trained to do. He went to medical school and he became a medical internist. So he's now an MD. He's a DVM MD. And I know a couple of those, but for different reasons, did both. One was because the technology in the human side was ahead of the technology in the animal side, but now the animal side is caught up. He was a veterinary radiologist and he went from one to the other. But fortunately, you know, practicing in Los Angeles, we don't get a lot of this. In fact, we get very little. Sometimes it might make a difference between, are you going to do a CT or an MRI? MRI might be a little bit better, but they just can't afford it. CT is a little less expensive. They'll do things, but we know that once we send a case to a specialist, I mean, even for me, I'm amazed at the pricing and how crazy it's got. Literally, things that I do, not as a specialist, but I do them because back in my day when I started practicing, there were all these specialists. So we had to do a lot more as general practitioners. And I'll do something, for example, I'm the Frenchie guy. So I do the nares and the soft palates, right? And I, you know, the BOAS, the breathing issues. And I charge a very fair price. The specialty groups, literally twice what I can do it for. And now, I'm sure there are a lot of business things that go into this. First of all, they're usually now run by big business. Secondly, the equipment that they have to maintain and the hours that they have to be there and the staff they have to maintain. I get it. It's more than my little, you know, two-doctor practice. But it is something that we have to, I guess, keep in mind. So how this came about to me, and I really wanted to hear some people, some opinions, is it's when it comes to cancer. And I've had, you know, look, we know that we're not going to cure cancers. Very few are actually curable. Sometimes if it's not aggressive, if you have a benign cancer, like what's called hemangioma of the spleen, and I remove the spleen, that's a cure. But if it's hemangiosarcoma, it's not a cure. It's temporary. Osteosarcoma, we can make them feel better by amputating a leg, doing some chemo at an expense. And then you got the people that say they refuse to remove a limb. So why? Well, because the dog is already older. The dog already has arthritis in the other legs. They don't want to put that strain on the dog. So I guess the question becomes, and then what I hear a lot, I have clients that have gone through cancer treatment with a dog or a cat, and now they have a second pet years later. And it's amazing to me how they say, no, I'm not doing it. I go, why? Because their experience with the first one, it's very difficult. First of all, whether it's radiation, whether they're going in several times a week, whether it's chemo, whether it's their, you know, them getting sick. And it just, you know, in veterinary medicine, we do treat a little bit differently than in human medicine. In human medicine, knowing that there are multiple years, right, after the cancer. So they really hit it so hard that, as any of you know who have family members that have gone through cancer treatment or yourselves, it's not nice. It's not pretty. But the goal is to eradicate the cancer and give you multiple years. Well, most animals that get cancer, they're already getting it as an old animal, and they would have 2 years left, maybe three. We don't want to make those last 2 or 3 years miserable. So it's less chemo or less radiation. It's enough, a little bit more palliative. We want to make them comfortable. We want to shrink the mass, but we know we're not going to completely eliminate it. And in order to, you know, we know that these things have often spread already. So once they've started to spread, we can't stop that. So we have to be very, very, you know, careful not to make their life so miserable that it's not, those extra 2 years are not even worth it. And I think people have had experiences like that where it was so tough on them and they feel tough on the pet. How many of you, if any, have had animals before that had gone through cancer treatment, I guess somewhat successfully? For us, success in cancer is giving an extra year, a good year and a half. some cancers with lymphomas, they make it 2 or 3 years. But once these animals fall out of remission, it's really difficult to get them back in remission, or the drugs it's going to take to get them back into remission are pretty heavy duty. So would you do it again? I'm just curious to know. If you had it, you know, would you think about it the same way after the fact, having been through it once before, would you want to do it again for another pet? And how did the pet do? It might be a different cancer altogether. So you really can't sometimes generalize, because some cancers we know historically are easier to treat and take less work to at least to treat them. Sometimes there are some treatments now that you can have an oral medication. I'm working on one now. It's going once every 3 weeks. They take an oral medication. It's very effective. And then also there are all the ancillary things that come along with treating cancer. And that is, before the next treatment, we have to do lab work. We have to see, did we wipe out the white cells? Are the cells too low? How about anemia? How about liver disease? So all of these things kind of are intermesh that it gets to be very, very costly. And, you know, insurance will cover some of it. Oh, we're going to have a discussion about insurance after. I remember that. Remind me later. And by the way, there's no right answer here. There is absolutely no one answer. There's no right answer. Everyone's going to have a different answer. And people, as I've experienced firsthand, people that had a certain answer years ago with their first time are going to have a different answer this time. So chime in as you wish. Chime in. I'd love to know how you feel about this, because I think that one of the issues that we're seeing a lot of, and I think it's on many of your minds, and I know my clients' minds, is we call quality of life. What are we doing to the quality of life? And how much we want to disrupt that quality, and at what expense, and for how long to justify it. And these are the hardest discussions that we as veterinarians have with our clients, with you, because A, I might have a certain feeling about something, and I've been there, done that. I've seen the advantage of proceeding with treatment, and I'm trying to push for it, but I've had clients that they don't want to, they're not going to put the dog through it or the pet through it. So, you know, it's tough. Here's another one. This FIP in cats, we've talked about this before. Feline infectious peritonitis. It had been in the past a 100% deadly disease. And now with these new treatments, okay, using the GS441524, it's an amazing drug. We just call it GS441 for short. It's an absolutely amazing drug. And we are seeing cures. But what's the both a financial cost and a time cost? Because it is, you're looking at 84 injections, or I think they now have an oral form. I've heard it's not as good. I have not experienced with it, but the injections, much experience. And I've had all but one case in cured from FIP, an often deadly disease. Not often, it was 100% deadly. What do I think about the best preventive health measures one could take for a brachycephalic cat or a dog? Well, first of all, keeping them lean. So, you know, we know that these animals, the problems they have are respiratory. Now, in a dog, we know it's oftentimes associated with the elongated palate, with stenotic nares. That's fixable, and we can make their lives much more comfortable. Personally, I've never done it in a cat. I mean, the cats that we know have this are the Persians and the Himalayans, especially the Persian cats. And unfortunately, we, I don't mean you or me, but we as a nation of people have created this severe problem in Persian cats. Why? Because for some reason, it became more attractive to have the more pushed in face. So that's why we're breeding for this. And then these poor cats can't breathe. So what are we doing? So, you know, they should be breeding the cats that have little longer snouts, that are breathing freely. Those are the ones you want to breed. And instead, they want that little, where the nose is actually behind the eyes. It's nuts. And you got the folds and you got the drainage and you got, it's disaster. So it is what it is. So keeping them calm, keeping them cool, keeping them, if anything, underweight. The heavier the walk, the more weight they're carrying, the tougher it is for them to walk around. The tougher it is to walk around, the more that they're going to tire faster. Even just talking, not even running, not even a dog who's going out to the park and chasing a ball. I'm talking just walking around the house. So these are the things we can do. That's about the only prevention. The real prevention, especially when it comes to the cats, is, and our dogs as well. Look what we're doing to French bulldogs. I mean, we're breeding for that. Instead of what responsible breeders would say, I have a line of Frenchies, or I have a male and a female that had not had the surgery, have nice open nares. Those are the ones we should be breeding, not the ones that, And they can sometimes collapse on you. That's how bad it is. And I've seen bulldogs the same way, English bulldogs. So it's just more common sense prevention. And that would be my recommendation. All right. Hold on. I know there was... So hi, Doc. After Yetta, we think we would do or not do something different with another dog with congestive heart failure. Well, you know, what do you mean we would do or not do something different? So with congestive heart disease, I think that you're going to treat. I would 100%. You need, by the way, when you have these heart cases now, no longer is x-ray and EKG sufficient to diagnose and to determine what meds to use. It's got to be done by a cardiologist or anyone who does echocardiography. That is a cardiac ultrasound. That is the new norm. That is the basic. You're going to do blood work, you're going to do x-rays and echocardiogram. Once that's done, then the appropriate medications can be chosen, selected, and you're going to follow up every 6 months or so with an echocardiogram. It gets expensive. All right, it does. But that is the test of choice to really determine what is the best course of treatment for these dogs with congestive heart disease. And it's a great question. Now, once, however, all these meds, like with cancer, they are only good for so long. And once they start getting worse and you have to start adding more and more and more and more, and the animal seems to be suffering more and more, and its quality of life is becoming deficient, then you may have to make a decision. I think sometimes, and I've seen it with my clients, I've seen it with myself, we hung on a little too long. And you can never make a mistake by saying goodbye a little bit early, but you can make a terrible mistake by waiting too long. With that, words of wisdom, I'm going to take a break here. Pet Life Radio has to do its commercials, and we'll be back after these short messages. Those of you here on IG Live, hang in there, and we'll talk during the commercial break.
Gifts for my pets, sparkle and love, under the tree, from heaven above. Gifts for my pets, joy in the air, unwrapping dreams without a care.
Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and is conveniently located on the cat tree. Go to cattreetray.com. Bring home a luxury French bulldog from the world-famous Tom King's Kennel. Premium French bulldogs from excellent European bloodlines. Superior puppy care and lifetime health guarantee for your perfect companion. Use code TOMKINGSMAGIC for a magical holiday discount. Visit TomKingsKennel.com and find your perfect Frenchie today. Your pets will be over the moon with sparkly jewelry from Over the Moon Jewelry. Beautiful handcrafted matching jewelry for you and your pet. Wire-wrapped, beaded contemporary necklaces, bracelets, and charms. Go to OverTheMoonJewelry.com.
Gifts for my pets. Joy in the air. Unwrapping dreams without a care.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We are back. So during the break, we had a good question about shelter cats and upper respiratory infections. And some of them are treated and they still hang on. The problem is that you have close quarters. You have just so much of the infection, the virus in the case of Rhino and Khaleesi, the bacteria in the case of pneumonitis hanging around, that these animals, once they, if they do get better, you got to get them out of there. The longer they stay in, the longer they do not have a vaccine, the longer this is going to continue on. So that is the trick. And it's hard because if we're talking about challenge dose, a vaccine is only as good as its challenge dose. If you give a vaccine, you build up a certain immunity, and that immunity is going to handle the normal exposures that you might get walking on the street, going to a park, like, you know, a couple of days at a doggy daycare. But if an animal is being in a shelter situation where there's so many new animals coming in all the time with different strains of the different, you know, bugs, then it's going to be really hard to control even with vaccine. So it's a drag, but that's what it is. So hospitalizations, you're saying if you would do, again, when we're treating these animals, I mean, it's tough because, for example, kidney disease, the best way to treat kidney disease is to fluids, because we don't do dialysis. And in cats that could do kidney transplants, I would hesitate, but it's out there. It's out there for about 30 grand. It's out there. What I always say, this is where my herd health mentality comes in, to put a cat who has a terminal disease, like kidney failure, and to say, you know what, I'm going to spend 30K to give my cat an extra few years. Do you know what that 30,000 could do to help other animals out there that are in these shelter situations, right? That could use this to surgery that, where it'd be curative for life, and they're not doing it because they can't afford it. I have to think of the big picture sometimes. I was with one of my cats was kidney failure, and I was faced with that option. And at the time it was even less. It was a little less for me because I was another veterinarian. And even my very friend, dear friend, colleague, and one of the best internists in town said to me, who's been there with not his case, but with patients of his. And he says, Jeff, I wouldn't do it. He said, there are complications all the time. They're on drugs for the rest of their lives, anti-rejection drugs. There's no guarantee. And you're going to spend, at the time it was $20,000, and with no guarantee. When he said that, and he's one of my most respected internists, because he doesn't test just to test. He's fair. He's super smart. And when I heard that from him, I said, no. And I'm glad I didn't do it. Glad I didn't do it. So anyway, Macy Toomey, helping Persian cats. Okay, so there's a go. If you want a Persian cat, guys, there it is at the @helping_Persian_cats. So dozens and dozens of dogs that are desperate for adoption right now out of North Carolina. Oh, see, there's more. So again, if you are interested in pets, I can guarantee you're going to find a perfect pet for you. Yeah, there you go, North Carolina. All right, Life's the Beach. Hello, I'm waving. I'm trying to wave at all of you. Dasa isn't he? Our first time going through this, still has the baby teeth. Ah, so hold on. That's interesting. Now, if the baby teeth shouldn't be only there by themselves. Now, as they know, in the small breeds, they're going to lose the baby teeth, and their adult teeth are going to come in and replace. But oftentimes in many small breeds, the adult tooth comes in, but doesn't push the baby out. And we have double teeth. And when do we pull those baby teeth that never fell out on their own? Usually with the spay neuter. Now, I will tell you, in some of the teeth, like especially the canines, if the presence of that baby tooth has affected the angle and the location of how the adult tooth is erupting into the mouth, and if it's causing a malocclusion, the veterinary dentist say you need to pull those babies now, like right away, even if they're only 5 months old, even though you're not going to neuter or spay until another 6 or 8 months, you got to knock them out twice. Now, the positioning of the adult teeth are normal despite the baby tooth, then you could do what I recommend, and that is waiting until you're going to spay or neuter. Now, if she's coming into her first heat, that means she's around 7 months of age. You want her to have that first heat, as we discussed before. So now we're going to wait till this heat is over, and we're going to spay her right away as soon as the heat's, well, about 6 to 8 weeks after the heat is over. Then we can pull the baby teeth at that time. All right. Yeah, I know it is. I know it's tough. It's not going to be easy. Yes, double teeth. Yeah, I knew. Got to be double teeth because the adult's teeth are erupted by 6 months, 5.5, 6 months they're in. The first heat's usually at 7 months. So I know that all the adult teeth are in. So now we just have to pull the babies. 15 this week, Dana. Oh, good. Puppy Puck turns 15 this week. Wow. That's a good age. Thank you, Jan. Yeah, it is. It's tough. I know. I try to get people to try because you don't want to make a decision unless you've tried, because then you know what's going on. All right. So, well, we're out of time, but we have a little time to discuss. One thing I wanted to ask you, and again, it's an opinion. Now, for those of you who are parents, and I am one, and I remember when my kids were little and they used to have to go to a pediatrician. Now it's my grandkids going to the pediatrician. Would you be, or were you okay, or would you be okay as you plan ahead if you went to a multi-doctor kind of practice and you saw a different pediatrician every time you went in? Or would you like to have a pediatrician that you refer to possibly, or that you meet and really like, and their philosophy matches your philosophy, and you really want to have a relationship longer term because this doctor is going to be your kid's doctor for a while, okay? Same thing with pets. I have a lot of these core practices. I built my practice on relationships. I am so happy to say that I have many clients that have been with me for over 20 years, and sometimes even as many as 40 when I started practicing. So, and it's not them anymore, possibly it's their kids, or it's their grandkids. And that's where my joy comes from, the long-term relationships and knowing, really knowing, not only my patients, but my clients. And there are a lot of, as you know, corporate practices. We can get into a long discussion anytime you want to. I'm game about my feeling about corporate practices. But I will tell you that I was looking at from one such corporate practice, and I'm not going to mention a name, but I will tell you that I looked at the records, and they were a client of mine. They went to this new practice And you know, it was really hip and cool. And they thought, how great, it was convenient. You pay an annual one-time fee. You get all the exams for free. Oh, innovative. Yeah, it'll get you in the door. But she said, you can't get out the door for less than $1,000. But what struck me back, whoa, she's back at me with me now. But what struck me more, she brought me the records of the several times she'd been there. She was there 6 visits. And in the course of the 6 visits, she saw 5 different doctors. Only one doctor saw her twice. Once. They saw her 2 times, and that was it. All the others were once and then done, once and done, once and done. How do you really build a relation? How do you get to know a pet if every time you see him, where's the caring? You're just a number. So I don't know. Am I crazy? Am I nuts to even think this way? Do you like taking your dog to a place where you just every time, I don't care. Wherever there is fine. Is it really fine? That means you tell me that every single veterinarian on the planet is the same? I beg to differ on that one. Trust me, from the guy who gets referred a lot of cases from other people, and I read the records from other places, that is not the case. I'll tell you right now, don't kid yourselves. From the guy who's an expert witness and sees some unbelievable stuff that goes on in my profession, you don't think that every vet is the same. I'm going to leave you with that. But I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Do you go to a place where you really get to have a relationship with a veterinarian, or just you don't care? So tell me how you think it's better. I'd love to hear, love to share it. All right. JB, with the same pediatrician, just like I have had you for over 30 years. Thank you, Janice. And I'm thrilled. And I'm thrilled. Catsnippers, corporate is abysmal. The amount of charges is nuts. Many tests are necessary. Well, I can't agree with you more. I totally agree. That is exactly one of my thoughts about these places. The testing is crazy. All right. The groaning when I pick him up, or when he is trying to position himself, like, cut off the cause for concern. Well, it all depends. Sometimes is it, you know, if they're really in a comfortable position and you go to move them, even one of my dogs, who's the sweetest dog on the planet, sometimes if I try to move him, he'll give a yelp. I'm not hurting him. He says, Dad, leave me alone. I'm comfortable here. Don't move me. No, it's not a cause for concern unless there are other clues that there may be something going on, some pain. Hello, Ann. I'm going to see you tomorrow. Okay. Yeah, it is. It's like us going to the ER instead of one of our private practice doctors, and it's unacceptable. And that's the case. You know, when I started, well, the AirVet's predecessor, which was Live DVM, and then Brandon took over, my son took over, we changed the name to AirVet. That was what I used to say all the time. The veterinarian said, no, we don't want our clients talking to another doctor. Oh, whoa, wait a second. So when after hours, you take all your case out, that's amazing. They go, no. We send them to emergency. Oh, but aren't they seeing another doctor there? It's that you don't know. And that doctor doesn't care about you. We're there to protect the relationship you have with your clients. And we're not going to treat unless it needs to be treated, because we can't. We're going to give suggestions of things that will keep them back and go back to you tomorrow. Whereas they go to that emergency doc, you're toast. They're going to spend a fortune on unnecessary tests. And every test that they run, you can run the same test tomorrow for less money. But they're going to spend so much over there, they're not going to be able to spend money with you for probably 6 months. So congratulations, doc. That was a real good choice. Keep going, sending them to ER. But anyway, I go through this all the time with people. It drives me nuts. All right. Henry, how are you? So anyway, I know we're at the end of the show. When I get dirty looks from Mark, I know we're over time. So anyway, I hope this was insightful. Really, I'd love to hear more from you and what you think about all of these things, because it's important. It's important. And it's also, don't feel guilty. Don't feel guilty if you think that, you know, you can't afford something and you think it might be in the pet's best interest to say goodbye. Don't feel guilty if you don't want to go all out with the cancer treatment because it's making your pet miserable and you don't have the money to do it. I mean, remember, it's the question of, is it okay to say goodbye a little bit too early? You're going to say goodbye anyway. We're going to outlive our pets 90% of the time. Unless you're going to get a dog when you're 95. We're going to always outlive our pets. And I'd say always. Obviously, things can happen. And then hopefully you have kids that like pets too. But anyway, generally, there's going to be decisions that you're going to have to make. And I've made them. Told you, I blew one. I made it way too late. And when my own son said to me, Dad, we waited too long. You know that. I waited too long. But of course, we're hanging on to the hope. We're hanging on to the, you know, that 1 or 2 good days in a row that you see, and they, oh, God, maybe it's working, maybe the treatment's working, maybe whatever, you know, but then you see they go downhill again. And everyone's, you know, sort of breaking point is going to be different. So no one's going to, you're not being judged, really. You're not being judged. The only time that I will not put a dog to sleep is if I feel it's not ready and the owner feels because, well, because I'm moving and I just don't want the dog to be with somebody else. I don't think the dog's going to be happy with somebody else. Really? So you're moving and you want to put your 5-year-old perfectly healthy dog to sleep? It's not going to be me doing it. And believe me, any veterinarian, I'm sure, has heard those stories before. You know, we start to anthropomorphize. What? My dog's not going to be happy with anybody else? You know that my dogs are rescues. They've been with somebody else. Two of them are rehomes. They're thrilled to be with me. So of course they're going to be happy with somebody else. That's the beauty of that's why we love them so much, because they adapt and they're so social. And it drives me nuts when I hear those things. That's what makes them rally. You're right, Jan. At the very end, all of a sudden, a couple of days, it's because they may know they're in, but they rally because they love us so much. And it's so true. All right. Yep. Todd agrees with you too. It is so true. All right, guys, that's all we have time for today. As you know, you can always get a hold of me anytime at either drjeff@petliferadio.com or at jeff@airvet.com. And if you haven't signed up for Airvet, you should, because you will believe. I can only tell you, I've done over 4,000 virtual visits and less than 200 actually needed to go to emergency. So you all save yourselves a lot of time, a lot of money by talking to one of our Airvet vets when you think you have an emergency. And you'll be amazed that most of the time, really the vast majority, you won't have. Thank you. Thank you. And have a great week, everybody, as well. And we'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Instagram Live on Pet Life Radio. And it was great having you with me today. Take care.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.